Good morning. I want to thank you for being here with us this morning, and thank Jarrett for the reading. Hunger and thirst after righteousness. It's important, again, I will mention this hopefully every time, but it's important to remember that these are in sequential order. They're intended order as far as the Beatitudes are concerned. Blessed are they. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And here, blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. I was tempted to open the door here, both doors. Can you smell it? I can't yet, but you probably could if you had skipped breakfast. You would be more heightened senses. I remember as a youth, my family spent 2 years, I think it was 2 years, of weekends tearing down a three-story barn. I've talked about it a few times. And I remember one hot Saturday morning, I got up late and rushing to keep up with my dad and my Uncle Dana, because I was always in tow with them. And I remember forgetting my beverage. I forgot some water. And we went out, and it was hot. And we went out early, and we were out there most of the day. We would come back usually around 1 or 2, depending on how awful it was out there. And we were tearing down the sidings off the walls and just repurposing the wood. My dad, of course, had incredible plans for all the wood he was going to harvest off of that barn. And many projects were constructed from that one project. But I remember being without beverage, being without a drink. And it was an old barn, so there was dust and dirt and debris everywhere. And it was always in your mouth and in your nose and too often in your eyes. And there were few things better than when you got to take a break and you got to go over and you got to get something to drink. And that day I didn't have anything to drink. I hadn't eaten anything that morning, and we had worked real hard that whole day on a very hot day. And I remember coming home just waiting for something to drink. And my dad and my Uncle Dana had pity on me on the way home. They stopped and they bought me something. And even if it was just 5 minutes before I would have normally gotten something to drink, that felt really, really good. I'm mindful, reminded of a Tantalus, who is a Greek character in mythology, punished by the gods. I'm really bringing those out this time, aren't I? Last Sunday night we had and here is another that really comes to mind, who was punished by the gods. He was stood in a pool of water for all eternity. But every time he got thirsty and bent down to get a drink, the water would recede, and he was never able to. And just constantly up and down and up and down, trying to get relief for the torment that he was in, according to the mythology. And he was never able. You don't have to go far into the scriptures, in fact, into the Gospels, and Jesus tells a story of a man who, Lazarus, was not even able to dip his finger into water and touch it to his tongue because of the torment he was in, the rich man from that story. How much do you want righteousness? When he talks about hungering and thirsting after righteousness, usually we use those types of terms in a very magnanimous way, but we, in this culture, in this community, in the world we live in today, in this first world, we don't really know hunger and thirst in the way that some people do, especially people of this day, but effectively people in other countries, people in places where food is not as plentiful, where water, drinkable water, is not available, and yet they have water. They have water all around them, and they know very well that if they were to drink of the water that they have available to them, it would make them ill. And yet, sometimes they do, simply to take care of that need, that strong desire that they have. The Bible uses this imagery very appropriately and very often. There in John chapter 4, as we read here, if you turn back to Psalm, the 42nd Psalm, we have the same kind of imagery used. Obviously, they're not talking about water in the traditional sense of H2O or the physical example of water, but they're using this as a an illustration of the desire that one should have for God, for righteousness, for a covenant relationship with Him. In Psalm 42, in verses 1 and 2, probably fairly familiar to most of you, he says, "As the deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God?" Have you ever wanted to be with someone so much that it was almost on the same level as a hunger or a thirst? A strong desire that you miss them to such a degree, and the psalmist here, he wants to be with God in a more profound way. In Psalm 63, we could keep going, we'll do these two in particular, in verse 1. "O God, you are my God, early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you, my flesh longs for you. In the dry and thirsty land where there is no water. So I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory." And we look back, both back into the past and into other countries. And what is it that precipitates this hunger that people experience for physical food, but a lack of physical food available to them? And what is it that should precipitate our desire, our strong hunger, our need for righteousness in our lives, but the lack of righteousness that exists in this world, but the all-around depravity that surrounds us? And we live in a world, yes, that has what seems to be righteousness, what people would like to appear as righteousness, but is in fact polluted, is destructive, that which will make us ill. But what we need, how much do we want righteousness? Enough. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6, he says, "But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." You have people that say, "Well, I guess I'll follow Jesus while I wait for something more interesting to come along." Individuals like that need not apply. They're wasting their time. And there are many individuals who take a religious stance, who try to be spiritual in relation to what they want. But he says there that it is those who are faithful to God, just as those other individuals there in Hebrews chapter 11 were faithful to God. They exemplified that faith, not just in words, but in actions and how they lived and the things that they did and accomplished. And they were able to accomplish incredible things because of their faith, because of their obedience to God. Not just their believing in him as a mental acceptance of his existence, but a commitment to him, a willingness to live for him each and every day. And that is for those who diligently seek him, they are the ones who will find him. Those who grope for him, those who struggle and strive and try, those are the ones who will find him. And the rest, those who merely would kind of like maybe someday to find him, they'll always find something else, something to distract them, something that seems like the real thing, but they will not pursue it to the degree that they will find out that it is a false righteousness, that is a fake thing that they are grasping towards. And in such a way, it's important that we check to make sure that we are sure that righteousness is what we want. And that's a question that we all should ask ourselves daily, but we need to ask one another. Are we sure that righteousness is what we want? Because most of the time, and oftentimes is the case in the world, what we really want is to be vindicated. We want people to say that we're right. We want to argue for argument's sake simply so that someone will say, "You know what, you're right." Isn't it great when you hear that? Doesn't it make you feel really good to hear you're right? Have you ever argued in such a way, talked to someone and debated them, and argued something that you maybe knew wasn't explicitly right, but it would get the job done in proving that you were right, or at least getting them to admit to it? You would take a line of reason, a line of argument that they couldn't deal with, not because it was the right argument, but simply because you knew it would win the day. And that's not the righteousness we're looking for. In fact, in Luke chapter 10, Jesus deals oftentimes with people this way, but there were a few in particular. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 29, we have an individual who really just wanted Jesus to tell him, "Good job." A guy who came to Jesus and really just expected Jesus to say, "You know what, you're doing a great job." And there were a lot of people like that. There are a lot of individuals who consider themselves righteous or holy, and all they really want is to Jesus to admit it. They want someone to validate them, to vindicate their efforts in what they perceive to be righteousness. There was a rich young ruler who came to be validated. And here we deal with another individual, one who comes and asks him what it is to inherit eternal life. And in 26, Jesus says, what's your reading of the word, essentially? And he tells him to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. And he says to him, you have answered rightly, do this and you will live. And he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? That is to say, let's quantify this and qualify this. Let's make sure that you understand the parameters by which I am expressing myself and how amazing I am. So who is my neighbor? And the man had an expectation that he would have likely said, well, he would have said, other Jews. He would have said, the people who can return the favor to you. That's how we oftentimes see it. And what does Jesus say? He tells the story of the Good Samaritan who did that which was necessary. And who was the neighbor to the one who fell amongst thieves? And the man, it seems, verse 37, can't even call him the Samaritan, can't admit that the Samaritan would be the guy, so he relinquishes only what he absolutely has to, he who showed mercy on him. He won't say that Samaritan who showed him mercy, but he's incredibly vague in which guy he's talking about, even though only one of them showed mercy, and he happened to be a Samaritan. That was Jesus' point. He, wanting to justify himself, he tries to put Jesus in a position and carries him through all the way to, well, I'm going to push Jesus to have to say that I am right and righteous and good and benevolent. And Jesus does the opposite. He actually points out the inadequacy of his service because it's not to God. It was to himself. And then Jesus tells him to go and do likewise, which implies that this is a failing in this man's situation, in this man's life. He wasn't quite willing to go as far as he needed to go. In Luke chapter 16, if you notice in verse 15, he says, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. This really goes back to Jesus' words concerning charitable deeds and fasting and many other activities that we might be involved in, which are good and benevolent and helpful to the community and an expression of our relationship with God, of the light that we can express to the world, which is the love of Christ. But some individuals, as Jesus talks about, are hypocrites because they do it in such a magnanimous way, such an obvious way, such an open way, and they do it in order to be seen by men. And he says here that those individuals who just seek to be lauded by the community, by the people around them, by the people that they help, they have their reward. He says they have that which they were seeking, and so they get only what they were seeking. Wanting to be seen as right on earth rather than certainly being right in heaven. You ever find people play the Jesus card? We do this when we get home. Oftentimes, we ask the kids, "What did you learn about in Bible class?" And their temptation is to say, "God, Jesus." And while I would hope that was true, that's not exactly what I was asking, because there are a lot of lessons that they would understand and learn in Bible class that, yes, while God and Jesus are involved, it goes far deeper than that. And it should. In games like Apples to Apples, I don't really like the Bible version for one particular reason, and that's the Jesus card. Literally, there's a card in Apples to Apples that says Jesus. And how do you not play the Jesus card when it's appropriate? When you're saying, the word that you're supposed to find words that compare to, the word is righteous or good or just or holy or merciful. I mean, you could, any positive characteristic, you could throw Jesus down and you should win that point. Even if there are other people who are good representatives of that. Now, what happens if you have God and Jesus? You get the God card and the Jesus card laid down. Now what do you do? But how often do we do that in our community and the people around us? We drop the Jesus card just because we want to win the argument. It's weird not to pick Jesus. It feels sacrilegious or something, but we've got to be people who want to be righteous, not just simply so we can play the Jesus card, but so that we have Jesus in our lives, so that we have Jesus in our hearts. The question is righteousness an end or a means? And by that I mean, do we truly want to be like God or simply to escape from the penalty of sin? When I was a kid, my mom really wanted me to say I'm sorry to people that I hurt. And while I would do it in order to avoid pain and discomfort, I didn't always mean it. Sometimes I said it simply to avoid the problem. And sometimes we want to live a righteous life not because righteousness brings us closer to a relationship with God or helps us in our life, or because we want to be more like God. We want to exude righteousness in our lives. We want to be the godly individuals that we could be, but because we don't want to go to hell. And while that's a good reason, one good reason to be righteous, righteousness can't be the means by which we find that end. Righteousness itself is an end. To live righteous and right in this world, to live as God would have us, is one end in and of itself. And the question is, do we really want to be like God, or do we simply live as we think God would have us live just to get to heaven? Like, begrudgingly and of necessity. I only do these things not because it's right to do them, but because I don't want to go to hell. We've got to move beyond the fear simply of hell and move to a place where we want to do what is right because God told us to do it. And there again is another issue. Do you find yourself at your job, your employer? They tell you to do something, and you, knowing your job sometimes even better than your boss, I know that's crazy, but sometimes you know your job better than your boss, and your boss wants you to do it this way. Do you do it the way they told you to, or do you do it the way you think it should be done? Now, can you do that with God? Is there a temptation in us to look at God and to say, yeah, you want me to do it this way? I think I should do it this way, but I'll do it this way because you told me to. Or are we convinced that the way God tells us to do it is in fact the right way, regardless of what I think, regardless of how I feel or how I'd rather do it or how I think it could be done differently? If God tells us to do it, does that not mean that it is the right way of doing it? And if we want to do it a different way, are we not intrinsically wrong? At least in that desire to do it a different way? I hope you see the difference, and I hope we can find those differences in our own lives, because it seems like a subtle difference. We think righteousness for heaven's sake is enough, but God wants us to want to be righteous for righteousness' sake, that we want to be more like Him, not simply to achieve some end goal, because the results can be different. There's a temptation to pretend when you're young to be someone's friend because of some toy they have that you really want to play with. And you know, that temptation doesn't end. That's why man caves exist. Because this friend of yours, this neighbor, you buddy up to them. You butter them up because they have some tool that you'd really like to have access to occasionally. You see my point? God is not some divine neighbor that we'd like something good from occasionally. God needs to be our priority. His relationship is firm and steadfast, and what He wants is not just for us to be holy and righteous in order to get to heaven, but for righteousness' sake, that we would be more like Him each and every day, that we could live and dwell and move in His world, and we could, yes, absolutely go to heaven, but we could enjoy life here in a larger, grander way because of the righteous life that we're living. The results, he says, I love that. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness. How much do you want righteousness and truth? And it's demonstrated in how we live. It's not hard to find out where your priorities are. It doesn't take long, because we, as creatures of habit, and the only consistent thing is that we usually do what we really ultimately want, is you'll inevitably find out how committed you are how committed your relationship to God is, and where it needs to be strengthened, where it needs to be developed. But the results, he says, that those who hunger and thirst after righteousness will be filled. This is not a small snack to tide you over. There is a great deal of righteousness available to us, and I don't mean just in the one particular sense. We'll talk about a few. But going back to potluck, I hope that you are able to stay with us this morning and to enjoy the festivities, enjoy the time to spend together, that we would eat not only of the food that is available to us physically, but of the fellowship that we can have, that we could enjoy one another's company. But if you go away from potluck hungry, that's your own fault. Because there is no excuse. There is always more than enough food. And now we could say, well, I don't really like the food on the table. Couldn't we also say that about righteousness? We don't always like the expectation of righteousness or what God calls us to do. But if we truly desire it, we can be filled up in righteousness. We can find righteousness, a righteous result in a lot of ways. And the word filled here isn't just like, I feel better. You know, after the first couple of bites of food you have, you feel better. And maybe not, but sometimes you know, I could stop right now and I would probably be okay. You're not like, you know, throwing food in your mouth like cartoons. But here he's not using the word filled as in I kind of feel better, or I could get along without food for a while. He's using the word filled as you would with a stock animal, an animal that you intended on bringing to harvest, or crops being germinated, that they are taken care of in all ways, all capacities possible. In Revelation 19 and verse 21, when the devil and or the dragon and the beasts and the those following him stand on one side, and the lamb and those who are dressed in white are on the other, I love the message of the angel as he speaks to the birds of the sky. He tells them that they are going to be filled, full of kings and princes and men of all kinds of sizes. And like the birds who feast upon God's enemies, or the multitudes eating to their fill in Jesus' miracles, this fulfillment is an incredible one. In Isaiah 55, we should notice that the fulfillment comes through a specific element. In chapter 55, in verse 1, he says, "Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Yes, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me, and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me." Notice the end of verse 3 here. "And your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, the sure mercies of David." Where does true fulfillment come? In a covenant relationship with God. It comes from that relationship, that fulfillment that we can find in Him. In Psalm the very first psalm, this is how it all begins. Because the psalms all together, as well as the proverbs, were written for a purpose. Not just for poetry's sake, but they were written for the future. They were written for people who would read them, specifically one individual in each setting who would read them. His son, David's son, and then Solomon's son. Written for the future of his line, but given in posterity for us to be wise and to understand. And notice in Psalm 1 and verse 1, he says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that brings forth its fruit in its seasons, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper." What does God supply to those who seek him, to those who work towards his righteousness, to understanding. How about a higher level of righteous living? We are able to do more because we understand more. We are able to live a more righteous life because God is blessing us with the life that we have, as well as an instruction of help and guidance. So we can enjoy a number of things. We can be filled more with righteousness because we are going to do more righteousness in this life, because we are going to commit ourselves to that righteousness. And even if this world is falling apart, that our life and our hope and our psyche even, our mind does not have to fall apart, because we are planted by a river of water. And we have all that we need and all that we could possibly ever need in God. We also see the perfect forgiveness of our sins. Righteousness as in we are made righteousness. Or is it accounted to us as righteousness, as the New Testament as well as Genesis 15 would talk about. In Psalm 32, in verse 2, he says, "Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit." Now, if you ask the world, would they say, "Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness"? They would say, they would suggest, "Miserable are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness." And oftentimes, we focus on the things that we have to give up, which is the wrong perspective. We say, well, if I'm going to be a Christian, then I have to give up this, and I have to give up this, and I have to give up this. When in truth, if we understand the nature of righteousness and what God truly wants from us, we are encouraged and uplifted and strengthened in order to give those things up, which are a benefit, a boon to us. Giving them up is the best thing we could possibly do. Not a hindrance. It is our selfishness. It is our lack of perspective that keeps us living a life in sin. And yet, God wants us to have a fullness in us. He wants us to have that perfect forgiveness of our sins so that we can say truly blessed, happy, or favored are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, because they're satisfied. Satisfied not just with the meager portions of this life, but more importantly, with their understanding of the next. In 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 13, "Nevertheless, we according to his promise," and that's an important part, "according to his promise, look for a new heaven and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." Not just righteousness as in God, right? Revelation 21, 27, "But there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life." Why? What's special about those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life? They, like Abraham, have been justified by their faith in God. They are accounted as righteous, and they are made righteous by the blood of Christ, having their sins forgiven. Remember that, according to his promise, we look for that new heaven and that new earth. Three elements of the righteousness that we are blessed by. Three different levels of righteous living, not only in this flesh that we can have a higher level of righteous living, but we can psychologically feel better about our lives. We can know that we have been redeemed, as 1 John tells us. That our heart, that God is greater than our heart and he knows all things. Even if we don't feel saved, if we are faithful to him according to his promise, we can know that there is a home in heaven waiting for us that is righteous in every possible way. And this accomplishment was according to the promise that God had given all the way back at the beginning. We have promises in Genesis 3, promises in Genesis 15 and 18. We have examples of the promise carrying through all the way through the scriptures, the promise of redemption, that which was once lost, our purity, our perfection, our righteousness, can be regained once more. And while it is tempting, and while it is a possibility for you to go away from potluck still hungry, and while it is unwise to do so, some will depart from the Lord without receiving the righteousness that is available to them, without receiving that which is his. And if you leave today, if you leave not only this building, But effectively, if you leave the church, if you're already a part of it, or if you refuse to come into it, you are walking away from the greatest blessing this world has ever seen, and you are walking into destruction, into perdition, into consequences that are far-reaching into eternity. And we would love to help you be blessed, to be happy, to be favored by God, to become His, to have an opportunity to change your life, that it might be more righteous in this life by your choices, that it might be made righteous by Christ's blood, and that you might dwell in righteousness in heaven one day if it be your will to choose Him this day. I pray that you would let it be known. If we can help you to become His according to His will and obedience to Him, if we can help you come back to Him or to stay with Him, whatever you need, I pray that you would come as together we stand and sing.